Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're locked in to Bears Monday on the Score. Listen all day as we react to the game. Get analysis from our Bears experts and take your calls. We are Sports Radio 670 The Score. Chicago's home for Bears fans. WSCR in HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. An Odyssey station. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by DuckDuckGo.
Hello.
Hub Arkish.
His expertise in football is second to none.
670 The Score, senior football expert.
You're talking to one of the great techno boobs of all time.
Executive editor of Pro Football Weekly.
This is probably too much information, but I always keep my phone in my back pocket. I just feel like my ass is buzzing permanently at this point. It's crazy.
Shaw media analyst and sideline reporter for Westwood One.
We've got Joe calling in from Elgin.
I just want to say that you are so underrated. You're fantastic. You really are. You've got a great opinion. I would listen to you all day.
Hub Arkish.
I'd love to poke you. I'm not going to now.
With Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi on 670 The Score. The Score.
Bears Monday means the input of Hub Arkish. Now that Matt Nagy has had the crux of his press conference where he tries to explain the unexplainable, as he often does. Hub is on Twitter at Hub_Arkish, Score NFL Insider, Executive Editor at Pro Football Weekly. So, Hub, other than this being remembered for a long time as the I Still Own You game, and that's probably how it will be remembered, what was significant in your eyes about the outcome or how we got to it?
Well, that's a great question. Good morning, guys. It's good to be with
Hello,
you again.
I
don't know that anything was all that significant, to be honest with you, other than another reminder of where this team is at. Who they are, kind of stuck in the middle, ready to play with the big boys but not beat them. And going along this path where everything is about developing the young quarterback. And, you know, I felt like this was the first game where you really did have to ask the question, because it was such a big game, might there have been a different outcome with a different quarterback? I'm not saying there would have been. I'm not predicting it. I'm not saying they should go back. There's no going back now. But I noticed just on social media and listening, you know, to everybody, that it started to creep into the conversation for the first time. The issue now is, listen, basically, even though he didn't become the official starter until a week ago or whatever it was, he's played almost the whole season. You know, you've played six games. He missed the first five quarters. We're talking about Justin Fields, obviously. And we continue to see some really exciting things. I continue to believe this kid has a chance to be a really good quarterback. But now you're into that stretch where is this – happens each week. You're looking for the week-to-week incremental improvement, and you're going to start to ask yourself, okay, when does this get better? And this was the first time I didn't really feel like he took a big step ahead from where he was last week. I think he's gotten better each week. Yesterday felt a lot to me like the week before, even with a very different outcome.
Yeah, I think the general thing seems to be that second touchdown drive is where he showed improvement. And especially after what I thought was just a terrible way to end the first half, where every problem that you could think of with the Bears offensively kind of showed itself. I did think that a lot of people thought, well, at that point it's a three-point game, and you've seen that significant improvement out of Justin Fields, at least in the game, and that's something to hang your hat on moving forward in the development piece.
Yeah, and Layla, it's real. You know, I'm not arguing with that. These are the things that we're looking for. But the problem is that in that game, after an outstanding first quarter, you know, and a great first drive, and the second drive, you know, was looking good until the missed. I haven't really had a chance to study much tape yet. You know, it is possible the officials were right that even though he jumped, he wasn't in the neutral zone. I don't know. I haven't looked, so don't jump on me. I'm not taking sides here. But either way, you understand why he did what he did. I don't think anybody can blame him for that one. I'm not sure the ball should have gone where it did and maybe shouldn't have gotten picked, but that's besides the point. The first two drives, you know, looked really good. And I think that was part of the problem, is it felt like this was the game where he was going to take another big step forward. And then he took a bunch of steps backward before he got that second half drive. To me, the game turned, okay, you're down 10-7. You get the ball with 4:09 to play in the first half. Yep. And you've started to lose a little momentum, but you know you owned him in the first period. And you got to get at least three there, hopefully seven. Then you come back out and get the ball to start the second half. And that's where you can take over the game again. And those were two of their worst drives of the game. Now, after that, yeah, he did come back later in the second half and had that drive. But then after that drive, it was missing again. So I guess that's kind of the point. You know, we continue to see these instances, you know, where you start to feel good about things. But you're going to soon start getting to the point now, you know, after four, five, six, seven games, where you want to see more, you know, than a few things like that. And so we'll see how patient everybody's going to be with them.
What was your impression of just how the plays are put together? I know you're not a play calling guy, but you are somebody who can view tendencies and see impressions and the game plan that was put together. And we did suspect a little bit, even I did. I wondered how much of it was Matt Nagy and how much of it was Bill Lazor. I know we're never going to know, but the first drive and the first scripted play seemed very solid, and then it kind of went haywire from there.
Yeah, you know, Layla, I hate conspiracy theories, and I know they're out there. Bill Lazor's calling the plays. I think we got to move on from that one, okay? Matt still has input. He designs the game plan, and he can say, I want this play at this time in game. But when we start talking about, you know, during the flow of the game, no, it's Lazor. And I didn't think the play calling was a problem. You know, there was a few spots there. I can't even remember off the top of my head now, but there was one call in the second half where I said to myself sitting there in the press box, I hate that play call. I got to go back and look at which one it was. But that's going to happen. I think we've moved now to they have identified, you know, what they can do well. They did stay with the run for the most part, you know, with Herbert. They did what they could. They didn't have a second running back they could trust, so you knew they weren't going to run it 35 or 40 times. But he got his touches at the starter and performed very well. And there were plays there to be made, you know. And it just, for some reason, when it's the Packers, they don't make them. But what I was concerned about, you know, when you ask about, I have a concern about coaching, although it's not the play calling. The Bears owned them in the first period. They had a great game plan. It was working. The Packers just needed to see the first drive of the Bears on offense before they made adjustments on defense. And they just needed to see the Bears defense twice before they made adjustments on offense. And then the last three periods, as much of an incredibly giant douchebag as he is, ooh, Rodgers was right. They owned the Bears, you know, and it's because their staff got in trouble and had answers. And the Bears get in trouble. And now, are the coaches making adjustments and the players just not executing, or are the players not, or are the coaches not giving them the right adjustments? That I don't know. This is where you can study the tape and get a sense for that, but without knowing what the play calls are, you know, it's hard to pick a side. But one way or the other, other teams, good teams, make adjustments in games. We don't see the Bears doing it.
You mentioned the term incremental development, and obviously it is, we always like to refer to development as nonlinear. On the positive side, I've been very hard on Cole Kmet, because for a guy who was drafted where he was drafted with his pedigree, even understanding a tight end's a tough position to learn, I've been hard on him because I expect him to stand out, to flash more than he does. It does look to me like he's finding open spaces a bit better. I loved the way he finished that one catch short of the sticks for the first down that Layla mentioned earlier. if we kind of squint at it, might we see a bit of a developing relationship between Fields and Komet?
Yeah, I think it's a real possibility. I think you've also seen the chemistry with Justin Fields and Allen Robinson develop over the last six quarters, as opposed to being all Darnell Mooney all the time. That's part of the growth of all these players, and particularly youngsters, you know, like Fields and Komet. I just think that, you know, Komet's one of those guys that he's got the Ditka, view. You know, people want him to be the next Mike Ditka, and he's the local kid, and so much is expected. And I had hoped he'd get off to a better start, but still think he's developing nicely, and still think there's a possibility that they've got a good one there. But, you know, it's interesting to ask about Komet, because as we were sitting talking to Matt just now, and I was going to ask, but I did, you know, you only get your 15, 20 minutes, and you want to stay on the stuff that's important. I may get to this later. Why isn't Jimmy Graham being used in the passing game? You know, I think you may have seen yesterday why Damir Bird isn't used more. They finally threw it to him and he dropped it. But Goodwin, Bird, you know, Graham is brought back. These guys aren't even a factor in the Bears passing game. And so at some point, you know, there's two possibilities. Jimmy Graham, I think, is 35 years old. He's 34, 35, and maybe he hit the wall. I don't know. You wouldn't have brought him back at that price tag if you thought he had. And so I don't understand what's going on there. I don't understand with Bird and with Goodwin that you brought them here to take the top off defenses, and on the rare occasions when you throw to them, you know, you got Bird dropping a wide receiver screen. So now you start to ask yourself, and this is where you got to go back, and this is where you really need the all 22. Is it that they're not using him, or is it the young quarterback just is not seeing a lot of things? And it is a possibility, because he's a young quarterback, not because he's not good, that he's just not seeing enough out there yet. That's what happens with all these youngsters, but on him in particular, some people will tell you that's why I think he absolutely should have been the second quarterback off the board. He was the fourth quarterback off the board. You know, teams were looking for reasons to poke holes in the scouting report. The big question was reading defenses, seeing the field, you know, learning that aspect. I have no reason to doubt that he can learn it, but some guys don't, some guys do. And this is where, as we look from week to week, where that development really has to come. And quite frankly, I don't know that anybody but the coaches can tell for sure, because they're the only ones that know what he's supposed to do. They know what the play call was, you know. Not to get too long-winded on this, I know I already have, but after the game yesterday, he was asked about the play where it appeared that Allen Robinson was wide open and he chose to go elsewhere and missed. And his answer was, my eyes aren't supposed to go there. That's not part of the progression on that play. Well, obviously, that's the wrong answer.
Thank you. Matt, I would say make your eyes go there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you got to see the whole field. I mean, you know, this is where I feel a little bad for the kid, because, you know, it was the Packer game. He wanted to win it. He lost it. He's there. He's still 22 years old. He's still learning everything, including the post-game press conference. So I don't want to beat him up for it. But I think that you have to analyze it and read it. He is not seeing the whole field yet. You can't expect him to see the whole field yet. That's why it's so dangerous with these young quarterbacks. But what we don't know is you look for percentages. You use the word, Dan. You look for incremental gains from week to week. And I don't know, you know, if he's making enough incremental gains from week to week.
Do you think he put that
eventually?
Now that I'm thinking, do you think he put that on Nagy? Do you think when he said twice, I remember he responded a little bit gruffly, where it's like, that was the naked play. I know what you're talking about. My eyes aren't supposed to go there. And he said it twice, and he got a little testy for the first time that we've heard. Do you think when he wants us to hear, the coaches don't want me to look for that, or the coaches don't want, was that a bit of a cry for help?
I don't think so, Dan. I really want to be careful here. He got the testiest, I think, when he got pissed at me with the final question of the press conference, which was a really benign question, which he could have used to give himself a, you know, a soft place to land. And instead, he gave me the one word no and walked out of the room. I asked him, you know, Kenny Clark, he gets hurt. He has to be helped off the field. I tweeted at that moment, that is huge. This guy is the best defensive player on the Packers. Well, he came back and got both his sacks after that. And on both occasions, it looked like it was him and Justin. Justin was scrambling, and you'd think Fields is going to win that. And in both occasions, Clark just closed on him and got him down. And so I just said, you know, are you still adjusting to the speed of these 330-pound guys? And that question, for some reason, triggered him. But to your point, Dan, you ask about my eyes aren't supposed to go there. There were three or four instances in that presser where, for the first time, you could tell he was getting a little defiant. He was clearly more upset than usual. And I think that's reasonable. You know, again, I'm not pretending that these guys are babies, but you're asking a lot of a 22-year-old young man to step up and carry the Chicago Bears on his shoulders. And I think he was just more frustrated than anything yesterday in that press conference. I don't think he had any other intentions.
I don't want to be the one to make you circle back on Jimmy Graham, but I'm going to just briefly follow up on the idea of Hub. Is the practice time any indication of what we're seeing out of Graham on the field and how he's being used? Because we've all seen the reports where he gets the veteran days off here and there. I understand part of that is to keep him fresh, but it might be a context clue here in all this.
Well, Layla, it's a good point. It could be, but my answer is I don't think so. He actually, if you go back and look, he's been taking one veteran day a week, and at that age, I think that's reasonable. Now, some would ask why pushing 40 Jason Peters isn't, and I think the answer is obvious. He got here late, and he's still learning a lot of things and playing his way into shape. But Jimmy Graham is a mystery to me, because you know what a red zone benefit he was last year, what he's been his entire career. Red zone benefit can have the same impact on third and medium and third and short situations. There's all kinds of places to use him. I would think he'd be a young quarterback's best friend if he can still do it physically. And yet the flip side is if he can't do it, now it could be because he's a veteran invested, that they owe him the full salary. It's going to take the full cap hit since he was on the roster opening day. So it's not as simple as save some of the money now. That's over. That opportunity is gone. But I don't know. It's a real mystery to me. When he is out there, he is involved. He's emotional. He's demonstrative. And I can't believe he doesn't want the football. So it's really a puzzle, and at some point, we're hopefully going to get an answer, but I don't know right now.
We have Bears defense to discuss with Hub when we come back. Bernstein and Rahimi, middays, 9 to noon, Monday through Friday. This is Bears Monday on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Talking football with Hub Arkish on a Bears Monday. We will have him for two segments on Wednesday as well, when you'll get to jump in with him. It's the bottom of the hour, brought to you by DuckDuckGo. And Hub, I know when the Bears brought in Mike Pettine ostensibly to help out Sean Desai, that the former Bears defensive coordinator, former Packers defensive coordinator, would be considered an asset on this week. And yet, even though the Bears defense did okay against Aaron Rodgers, and that's no small thing, I was a little surprised that their run defense got creased the way it did. What did you see going wrong in the run D?
Well, you saw some, holes he could drive a truck through. And so that suggests that it's a combination of physicality and some missed assignments. And again, got to go back now and look and see, who appeared to be moved out of those holes. But the other thing that I just don't think you can ignore, and I asked Matt this in the press conference just now towards the end, is it was pretty clear, both from their snap counts and just watching the way they were moving and trying to protect those injuries, that not only were Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack not 100% yesterday, I don't know how close they were, particularly Hicks, who took himself out a couple times, and you could see him trying not to show it on the sideline and then coming back in. And then it gets masked by the fact that they each did have a sack. But at some point, you got to ask yourself the question, if they're not 100% or at least 98 or 95% with 11 games left, how do you balance, the issue of getting them to 100% and needing them out there on the field? And I got to go back and listen. Matt gave a pretty detailed answer and acknowledged that it's a fine line that they walk, and he didn't dispute, that they weren't as close to 100% as you would like. And so, it's not an excuse. I mean, injuries happen, but I do suspect that played into it too.
Yeah, Akeem Hicks's health is definitely, I think, something that we are all watching, and just the plays where sometimes Mac is not in and out of the game, although his performance, I think, just overall, the sacks that the Bears are getting should still be appreciated. We saw a very nice series out of them to begin the game where you saw that pass rush come back again, and to see Hicks and Robert Quinn and Mac do what they were doing beginning in the game, I thought that was a reason for some real appreciation too, just to see that consistent plan working. It was just unfortunate to see them get away from that you know, over time.
Yeah, you know, Lila, you're right. And you know, what I thought was interesting, though, is that, again, when you look at the snap counts, you check the plays, some of the situations where either Hicks or Mack or both were not on the field, you know, and whether that is just their regular rotations or whether they're being protected, and I'm 90% sure it was more, not protected, but whether, you know, they're acknowledging, you know, their limitations because of the injuries, I do think, you know, was a factor. They've obviously got something good. Well, I don't know if they're still number one. I'm guessing they are. Nobody went off yesterday. You know, the reason they're number one in the NFL in quarterback sacks is because of the way Quinn and Mack are working together. And now everybody else is benefiting from it, too. So that's the dilemma. I mean, you want them on the field, but, you know, you're not able to have them on the field for their typical, you know, 70 to 80% of the snaps in a game. So now you're choosing your spots, and some of it's going to go wrong. But that's also, to Dan's question, that's not the answer. I mean, the run defense wasn't good enough yesterday. It wasn't close to good enough. And I think I wrote in my game preview on Friday that was exactly what the Packers were going to try and do, because the Bears were going to have a bit more success with Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers and other teams have, and they did. You know, you look at this game, guys, and other than that opener against the Saints, which I think everybody pretty much has thrown out at this point in their five wins, you know, the Bears held them to the fewest points they've scored this year. You hold the Packers and Rodgers to, what, 330 yards of offense, 325, you think you're going to win that game. You know, you hold Rodgers under 200 yards passing. But, you know, what the Packers did was they won the ground game, you know, and that's, I think, how they won the football game. And what's particularly annoying about it is that they have every bit as big of offensive line problems as the Bears do. Now, both teams are running the ball better. The Bears ran the ball well yesterday, but that's something that you would have thought going in the Packers shouldn't have been able to do to the Bears, and they did, and it really, I think, was the difference in the outcome of the game.
Do we know how healthy Jakeem Grant is? Because regardless of a win or a loss, I love watching him because he's a complete maniac.
Yeah, and Matt singled him out just now in the presser. The sprained ankle was... it was a real sprain, and he talked about him gutting it out and finishing the game. And obviously we get no indication now until Wednesday. You know, you wait for those things to swell up and then you give him a couple days. So he definitely went out of his way to point out how gutsy it was for him to finish on that ankle. So that doesn't mean it's a high ankle sprain or a terrible one, but it means that it is something we're going to have to watch now, and, you know, between now and Sunday.
While we're here with injuries, Hub, Tariq Cohen could come off of an injured list this week, right? The PUP list, but I hear he's just not moving well.
Well, I watching him out here, watching him on the sidelines during games, he no longer appears to have that hitch in his giddy up that he did have during training camp and even the first week or two of the season. And since he hasn't practiced, you know, I don't really know how to judge how he's moving. I do know he didn't look comfortable up until 3-4 weeks ago. And the bigger tell to me was they gave up a sixth round pick 2 or 3 weeks ago, knowing that he was 2 or 3 weeks away from being eligible. And so that suggests to me that he probably isn't coming off the list this week. But we don't know. There's been no update. There's been no feedback. And it is a little dangerous to guess just based on the way he's walking around when he's out there in shorts and a t-shirt. But I think you're right, Leila. I don't think it's going to be this week, and I think it could be, I don't know how much longer it could be, but I don't think they make that trade for Grant if they think. Now, you know, they made that trade, I believe, before Montgomery got hurt, and certainly before they knew Williams went on the COVID list.
No, I think it was after Montgomery got hurt, because I think it was in large response to the necessity of Khalil Herbert being moved up to running back, and they needed somebody else to take the pressure off with kick returns.
Yeah, you're probably right, Dan. I couldn't remember the exact timing of it, but either way, you know, giving up that draft pick in the hopes that you've got the all-pro punt returner coming back, those two things are kind of mutually exclusive, you would think. So I'm guessing that he is still a ways away.
Well, yeah, it's just something that I think a lot of people have asked about, and we've all been keeping an eye on. But the good news is Khalil Herbert definitely found some great cutback lanes on Sunday, too, and his running just continues to give everybody a lot of optimism.
he's the real deal. I've been telling people really since the Raiders game with our first extended look at him, he reminds me so much of the rookie Jordan Howard. It's scary. I think it's a very similar running style.
He's faster.
He's definitely a little quicker, and probably not quite as powerful. But sometimes I look at him and I think I'm watching Howard. And you know, Howard arrived game five of his rookie year. And so now, you know, I think Damian Williams is still a really nice complimentary number two. You get a healthy Montgomery. You got a guy who can start in Herbert. You got a solid, you know, weapon in Montgomery. That becomes a real strength if they can get these guys healthy.
All right, so now the champs loom. It's a 3:25 start on Sunday. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers early, I saw as much as a 12.5-point favorite. That's a lot in this league that you cover. Can you say anything is at stake for the Bears? Is this just a puncher's chance to flip the script?
There's plenty at stake, obviously.
Well, you know, is there?
Yeah. Dan, listen, we've been talking about this all year. And, you know, you've got a veteran team that is stuck in the middle. However good this defense is, it probably isn't going to be this good next year when you look at the age of these guys. You've seen that they can beat other potential playoff teams. You know, the Raiders bounce back. They're 4-2 now. You know, they're in the hunt. Bengals, impressive 4-2. You know, Bears beat those teams. It's not like the Bears weren't in that game yesterday. And so, you know, this narrative that they just stink and that there's nothing to play for, it's just not based, you know, on fact. I mean, in this NFL, with the parity that we see, you got to hang around 500, and you got to get a little winning streak, and if you can get to 9, 10 wins, you know, even 11 wins, you would hope. I don't see the Bears getting there. I'm not predicting this, but if you can get there, you're a playoff team again. And they, right now, looking at their wins and their record, they're in it as much as anybody else. And so you keep going week to week. Now, if you look at the schedule, they're at risk of putting together a bit of a losing streak here. And so that could change, you know, in the next couple of weeks. But I think this is a huge game for them. I mean, even if they go down there and just play them to the final whistle, you know, and aren't good enough to get the win. Now you're sitting at 3-4, but you see them playing with these guys. What they don't want to do is go down there and get blown out. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I believe, are 32nd or 31st in the league defending the pass. And so this is definitely a chance for Fields to take another step forward. And then you look at where the defense is at. You know, Bucks came in here, I want to say it was week five last year, and nobody gave them a chance, and they beat them. Now they got to go to Tampa. I think it's a really interesting game. I'm not surprised that number is going to be in the 10 to 12 point range, and it probably should be. But it doesn't mean that the Bears won't go out there and you know, be proud of themselves and acquit themselves well. So that's what you hope for.
Hub, thanks. We'll talk Wednesday.
All right, guys, take care.
That is Hub Arkish. When we come back, we should pay proper attention to the city of Chicago's newest sports champion as they brought home a trophy in dramatic fashion yesterday in Chicago. So props to them next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Lead is 7 for Phoenix. Quigley hits again. 26 from Allie Quigley. Griner's 3. Rebound Parker. She's left alone. Mission accomplished. That's it. For the first time in franchise history, the Chicago Sky are WNBA champions.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I had flashbacks from high school when I first realized, like, we won the state championship, and it was kind of like similar. I don't know. It was amazing to just hug my dad and my mom and my family, and I don't know. It's just an amazing feeling to be from here and see so many people in the stands that have been supporting you since you started. Like, I sent Allie a picture this morning of us when we were in high school, and it was like, man, not bad for two suburban kids, right? Like, playing in the WNBA finals together. So I think it's just a moment where you just have to really take it in. And so that's what that was.
Candace Parker came here to do one thing, and her first year, she did it. How great was that, watching the Sky win the title last night?
That was a highlight courtesy of ESPN, and the just the number of moments, the little things, that whole fourth quarter, and thanks to everybody on Twitter as I was finishing up writing about the Bears, that, hey, don't miss this fourth quarter. You know, they're down 11. Might have been down 11.
It was 11 in the fourth, 14 in the game at one point.
And it was just when you felt it building and the energy in that building, and they start missing layups, and the number of people involved. Stephanie Dolson was just a stalwart down the stretch. And everybody hitting shots. You know, it was Candace Parker herself makes a shot, but then she realizes near the end that they were probably going to win. And it's just the tears of joy start coming. And I don't know if it was Courtney Vandersloot or Ellie Quigley who you saw walk over to like, hey, this isn't over yet. It's not crying time yet. Just pull yourself together. Let's finish this thing off. Like, not yet. And yelling at her. Like, obviously, clearly she's going through some stuff out there.
Yeah, there's 10 seconds left in the game.
Yeah.
And Vandersloot was at the free throw line icing it. And Quigley got in her face and said, hey, you know, like you said.
Right, chill out.
Hang on.
There's a time and a place for this, but let's take it easy.
Ellie Quigley, by the way, what a performance in the fourth quarter to get them within range. And you talked about Dolson getting them ahead for the lead. And Candace Parker in the third quarter, when they were down 14, like you said, Layla, she took over at the midway point of the third quarter, finished that quarter. Quigley took over at the beginning of the fourth, and it was back and forth. That was really, really fun to watch. Like, emotionally, you could feel it. The energy at Wintrust Arena was outstanding. That was super entertaining.
It was, and then
Mercury won't meet the media.
Yeah, that. What is that? This is the WNBA finals. You are not allowed to just take your ball and go home like that. I can't believe that wasn't stopped. But let's not take away what we saw. It wasn't just that. It was. There were just good plays in the game. You know, you talk about Parker and just the outlet pass that she had to Kalia Copper. Like, that was just the looks they were getting inside, and then the inside-outside game. The threes that Quigley knocked down, too, were so clutch. And they go on that 9-0 run, too, in the second quarter to get back in it. And, man, that was – you could exactly see what was happening. And then, of course, I think at the end she was like, oh – this was the thing I needed to do. This was it. Like, win for my hometown team. I came back here after 13 seasons away, and she was able to pull it off. It was mission accomplished is the best way to put it, I think.
And I was wondering, too, that are Allie Quigley and Courtney Vandersloot the first married couple to win a team sport championship together?
And we talked about this before the show started. We all had to start thinking off the top of our heads about doubles tennis.
Like a mixed doubles tennis. I think there was a squash team that was a husband and wife.
And I know, at least in the women's hockey space, the Olympic teams have had married couples before. But I don't know if they played on the same team at the same time.
Right.
I'd have to look it up.
This could be one of those things. And I'm loving the idea of like a typical married couple, and they're going to like, you know, the celebration or the parade or the whatever the next party is. And it's like, okay, honey, how late are we staying? I don't know. Did you bring keys? I don't know. Well, we didn't eat. When are we going to eat before? Or are we going to eat after? Well, I thought you ate before. You said it was a late lunch. I know, but now I'm hungry. Well, look, if you didn't bring keys, you can go. I'll stay. No, that's fine. I'll go. I need to get to bed anyway. It's just, you're not talking about a championship celebration and being involved in it and passing a trophy around and having those conversations.
No, that's a fun angle of this too, but just for the Sky.
Oh, it's so cool.
To be able to come out the way they did to win that game, and especially after, I think, Phoenix, that was a competitive game. And for them to close it out the way they did with the runs and just coming back from that big lead being down, it was a storybook ending to that season.
You know the sign of a well-coached team? When they're able to take turns, but it doesn't look like they're taking turns. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Where a really well-coached, a team where they understand each other sort of innately. When there can be some one-on-one opportunities, there can be some two-person game. I got to change my vernacular. Do they call it two-man game in the WNBA? But when they refer to that, like, there were times when people knew it was their shot or knew it was their opportunity, yet we always decry turn-taking. That is in the fourth quarter of a championship clinch, and it was all okay. And to me, that's just the sign of a really good coaching job.
Agreed. And it just got the job done. They shared the ball. You saw the extra pass is still being made. We talk about that inside-outside game leading to the key threes from Quigley, Parker, and then inside to Dahlstrom. And they found the open people, and it was working.
Vandersloot had the turnaround jumper in the paint. Yeah. That was a huge shot.
The swish, yeah.
Yeah, and you talked about Kalea Copper, the MVP of the series. I mean, this is, you know, you talk about the significance of the win. I think it's such a cool local angle to talk about Candace Parker and Allie Quigley, that relationship. You know, Allie Quigley's been a part of this this organization since 2013. And you talk about Candace Parker being in the WNBA since 2008. This is the culmination of, like, two greats in the history of this sport. And, you know, obviously just being ignorant to the sport, I love the fact that we are now getting more of it to the forefront and using Chicago as a little bit of a propeller here, right? I mean, this is one of the largest media markets in the country. A little upset that mirrored that the Bears and the Packers during the afternoon, but we got to catch the end of it, and I hope this is the beginning of more exposure for this sport.
Well, if they're this good, it will be. I mean, this is it's also the trap that also happens like every year when it was, whether it was Brandi Chastain or like, now this will do it. Now this is the moment. We do tend to jump to thinking that, or look at the Blackhawks. Now hockey is here to stay in Chicago. It will always be at the forefront. It's like,
yeah, you can't force interest.
You can't force it.
However, if there is more exposure, maybe more eyes, and maybe there is eventually more interest.
There's one way to get that job done if you're the team, and that is to win, and they did. They did their job. And then Candace Parker came out here to do one thing, and she got it done.
I would also say follow it up with the best PR you possibly can have. Follow that up with getting your players out there, with answering every request you can with a yes, of making sure that the next phases of allowing for those opportunities are professional and forward thinking and proactive.
Yes. When we request to talk to players, we want to hear from them for a reason. People want to hear from them. Everybody wants to get to know them more. This is their time. And that's what we're trying to do as well.
And that's why the WNBA cannot let the Phoenix Mercury say, yeah, after finals, we're not talking. That's Bush League stuff. That is absolutely unforgivable.
Be better.
Yes, as a league, as a team, the coach, have them out there. That is, you can't do that.
Especially when you've got veterans on that team like Diana Taurasi.
She's 40 years old. She's everything. A face of the game.
She scares the hell out of me.
She's bad. You do not want to fight her because she'll kill you.
And I want to hear what she has to say, the insight that she brings and the understanding. Like, that's something that people deserve to hear. You also don't ever miss Lance Briggs and what he has to say, and he's been at the center of some discussion. He's also joining Anthony Herron for the latest Miller Lite Top Draft show of the season from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Beacon Tap in Des Plaines. While you're there, register for a chance to win Miller Lite loft tickets for a future Bears home game. Brought to you by Miller Lite, the proud beer partner of your Chicago Bears. Taste Bears fans can depend on. It's Miller time.
She's Leila Rahimi. I'm Dan Bernstein. Transition time next. Always entertaining on a Bears Monday to bring in Lawrence Holmes. He's coming up on The Score. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly
Auto Parts. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.